appropriate standards of health, safety, and environmental protection within the built environment. It is to promote sound governance of the built environment profession, to promote liaison in the field of training in the Republic and elsewhere, and to promote the standards of such training in the Republic. It is also to serve as a forum where the built environment professions can discuss the relevant issues. And lastly, it is to ensure uniform application of norms and guidelines set by professional councils throughout the built environment. Chair, we are governed by legislation. I'm not going to go through all the F's that are in front of you, Chair. But one of the key ones is the Republic of South African Constitution, which is the superior legislation for our country. And then we have the Council for the Built Environment Council and other acts that are governing the sixth Built Environment Professional Council. And then there are other key acts that are included in the slide. One of the key ones is the Skills Development Act. Chair, allow me not to go through all of them. I will then highlight the four goals, strategic goals of the CBE. The first one being a built environment that is responsive to the developmental and economic priorities of government. A transformed built environment with appropriate, adequate skills and competences that are responsive to the country's infrastructure delivery, operation, and maintenance needs of the country. It is an optimally functioning built environment with a responsive and relevant policy and legislative framework based on informed and researched positions. And then the last strategic goal is a built environment profession that operates within a regulated policy and legislative framework. I thought it would be important, Chairperson, to just quickly go through the background of the transformation agenda. In 2010, CBE conducted a transformation in Durban. Two of the key issues that were raised in this in Durban, it was the transformation and the skills development. And then the second one, it was the sustainability of the built environment profession. This was informed, Chair, by the research work that we did in 2009. There were a number of issues that were raised through that study. So we wanted then to engage the stakeholders on those issues and to try and get their buy-in on the way forward on those issues that were raised by that study. So there were recommendations that came out of that endeavor. Under transformation and skills development, the CBE, out of that study, developed the skills pipeline strategy. This was then a place where we can share this skills pipeline strategy. The stakeholders, they received the skills pipeline strategy, and CBE was then mandated to start implementing this skills pipeline strategy. But what was discussed was that it needs to be developed, to be implemented in phases. We had the buy-in from voluntary associations, employers, CBE, CETA, Department of Basic Education, and tertiary institutions. And it was important for all these key stakeholders to work together to make sure that the skills pipeline strategy is implemented. It was also recommended that it is important for the built environment to conduct carrier awareness campaigns so that we start to raise or create awareness about the built environment professions and at an early phase of the learners. on the issues of sustainability of the built environment profession, the stakeholders agreed with the CBE's report, which I've highlighted that it was one of the issues, or it was our, like, the baseline information that we got, and we used that as a tool or mechanism to engage our stakeholders. So one of the issues that were raised was the issues around government tendering processes, which were not satisfactory. So there were the recommendations that came out of that stakeholder engagement. One of the suggestions was that the government should use a two envelope system. I think the focus here was to try and make sure that those who receive tenders, they have the skills, they have competences to implement those infrastructural projects. It was also suggested that there should be a roster model, referral model, and CIDB model when the government is taking out tenders. The CIDB model, it looks into the issue of skills development, that as the government is taking out or giving out tenders, there should be a skills component in those tenders. There was also a strong recommendation that standard specification and scope of work should be developed by technically competent people. I think the honorable members will agree with me that there's been a lot of issues around the quality of work that was done by the contractors. So as a result of that, the stakeholders felt that it is important to include technically competent people when the government gives out those tenders. It is very good that the government is trying to encourage, especially black entrepreneurs, but it was important that there should be that inclusion of technically competent people in those businesses. The state departments, specifically infrastructure departments and municipalities, should be capacitated with a built environment professional. Again, it was felt that although the municipalities are giving out tenders to contractors, but it would be good if they are themselves capacitated so that they are able to monitor the work that is done by the contractors. It was also mentioned that mentoring and training for young graduates and small firms should be part of tender requirements. This is also part of the CIDB model. So this was going to address then the transformation issues. Then lastly, the sector charters were seen as key in advancing government transformation agenda. Currently we have the property sector charter, but we are working towards having the transformation charter for the built environment. Now, Honorable Sitani, this is a draft definition of transformation, because as CBE, what we have done, I think I presented this before, that we have established the transformation steering committee. We felt that out of Indaba, it was important to form partnerships to collaborate on the key areas that deal with transformation. But we felt that it is important for us to have an understanding of what we mean by transformation, to have that common understanding. There is a dictionary definition of transformation, but this transformation, it's a draft that has been done by the Transformation Steering Committee. So this is how we then define transformation. It is a profound process of change emanating from a need to redress historical disadvantage with a specific focus on the improvement and provision of equal opportunities and access to quality education, training, mentorship, and skills development in an effort to drastically increase the quantity and quality of registered built environment professionals. Honorable members, if you can look into this definition, I think it is highlighting, or it is they best alignment with the CBE skills pipeline strategy. It highlights those phases that are outlined by the skills pipeline strategy. Chairperson, allow me to request my colleague here to take us through the status of transformation as highlighted by the six BEPCs.
Thank you. Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members and colleagues. My name is Irad Pisser. I'm the Transformation Manager at the Council for the Built Environment. And I was asked to present to you today statistics on registration figures that comes from a recently conducted baseline and situational analysis study looking at the status of transformation within the South African built environment. The very important to note is that these figures are specifically relating to registered professionals. And as such, it only represents a slice of the pie. At the end of the day, if we were to include all unregistered practitioners in the field, the picture might look completely different than this. We don't know. We hope to, in at least this financial year, start to capture the status of unregistered practitioners within the field, and hopefully that will contribute to our stats. Now, the purpose of the baseline study was, first of all, to provide us with a substantial foundation to guide and focus our future transformation efforts. Specifically, this enables us to set realistic targets for transformation in collaboration with the various built environment professional councils that are attainable, realistic, and actually measurable, so that we can see whether or not our interventions are producing success or not, and then replicate that, obviously, within the various professions. Additionally, what the statistics enables us to do is to highlight problem areas at specific stages and in specific categories. It should also be noted that this study was limited in the sense that it did not investigate the reasons behind the trends that we identified in the stats. But as I said, it pinpointed to those areas of difficulty and also areas of success that we need to investigate further to see how we can better improve these figures.
I'm sure honorable members are bound to raise this. As you go along, from what I see, we have lots of percentages. So if you could kindly speak to the figures. 6% of what? 3% female, 6% versus male, female. So we need to have some figures. Honorable Fidel?
Thank you, Chair. Also, those abbreviations, you know, you get SACP Member of Parliament at the bottom.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I do have the figures represented within the detailed report. The purpose of highlighting the percentages was really to compare across a certain period. So I will address the figures if you like and give you the accurate figures.
Yes, we'd like that as you go along. Otherwise, you refer to a main presentation, but you are speaking to an executive summary. So it would be helpful if in your executive summary overview, where possible, you just speak to the figures. Honorable member?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think you are correct. When you were starting making a presentation, we're looking at it and asking what is the number of this percentage, because you know the percentage doesn't give you true reflection of the real statistics of what has happened. Because if you say one out of 10, it's 10%, you see? And then if you go to 100 also, you know, you can see that it doesn't give us a clear picture of what is taking place if you don't include numbers in your presentation. And also the abbreviations. It's important that when you do the presentation, you first clarify the meaning of this jargon that you have put here. Thanks.
Thank you very much,
sir. Thank you, Chair. Noted, and I will include that in future presentations. for now, if you'd allow me, I will give you the actual figures as they were captured in the 2015-2016 financial year. Perhaps I can give that first and then we can talk to the percentages. I think that would be more conducive. If we are looking first of all at gender representation in the professional categories, in the Engineering Council of South Africa, the total number of registered professionals is at 27,342, where we have female representation at 1,619 and male representation at 25,723. In the South African Council of the Architects profession, we have a total number of professionally registered individuals of 8,330, where females represent 1,714 and males represent 6,616. Then if we look at the South African Council for the Landscape Architects profession, we have a total number of professional registrations of 171, where females are represented by 80 and males are represented by 91. In the South African Council for Project and Construction Management professions, we have a total professional registration. That's one of the my apologies for that. It's presented a bit differently in the report than it is. That stands at 2,200 total professional registered individuals, where females represent 51 and males 2,149. The South African Council for Property Valuation Professions, a total number of registered professionals of 1,391, where females represent 282 and males represent 1,109. In the South African Council for the Quantity Surveyors profession, a total number of professionally registered individuals of 2,387, where females represent 412 and males represent 1,975. If we are looking at racial indicators for the professional categories, once again starting with the Engineering Council of South Africa, the total number remains the same. African representation is at 4,880, Indian representation at 1,727, coloured at 558, and white 20,177. The South African Council for the Architects profession, we have African representing 1,192, Indians 562, Coloured 582, and White 5,994. The South African Council for the Landscape Architects profession, we have Africans representing 1, Indians 2, Coloured 1, and Whites 167. The South African Council for Project and Construction Management Professions, African representation 281, Indian representation at 107, Coloured representation at 60, White 1,759. Then the South African Council for Property Valuers profession, African representation at 206, Indians at 64, Coloureds at 58, and Whites at 1,063. And then finally the South African Council for Quantity Surveyors profession, 401 represented Africans, Indians at 173, Coloureds at 41, and Whites 1,651. Moving on to candidate representation in terms of gender. At the Engineering Council of South Africa, total candidates 17,417, where females represent 3,857 and males represent 13,560. South African Council for the Architects profession. We have a total of 2,195, with females represent 691, and males represent 1,504. The South African Council for the Landscape Architecture profession, a total number of 67 candidates, where females represent 33 and males represent 34. The South African Council for the Property Valuers profession, total number of 712, where females represent 251 and males represent 461. The South African Council for the Project and Construction Management profession, a total number of 1,441, where females represent 409 and males represent 1,032. And finally, the South African Council for the Quantity Surveyors profession, a total number of 2,413, where females represent 771 and males represent 1,642. We move on to racial representation at candidate level. In the Engineering Council of South Africa, African representation is at 9,637, Indians at 1,793, Coloureds at 479, and Whites at 5,513. The South African Council for the Architecture profession, total number of Africans 659, Indians 178, Coloureds 117, and Whites 1,241. In the South African Council for the Landscape Architecture Professions, African representation at candidate level 10, Indians are at 2, Coloureds at 3, Whites at 33.
Thank you, Chairperson. Another problem that we are having here is that the slides are not numbered, and he doesn't talk to the numbering of the slides. We are totally lost, Jeff, now where we are. Most of that, some of the things when she is presenting, they don't follow the same sequence that is here in our slides. Thank you.
Could you kindly do your best to assist members to take them along with you where slides are represented?
Thank you, Chair. I think the information I'm presenting to you now is not captured in the slides. The slides represent the percentages and the percentage differences. I'm giving you the actual figures at this moment as contained in the detailed report. So it doesn't make sense for us to move across the slides. We can stand the summary slide, which will be more conducive to this discussion. After I'm giving you these figures, I'll talk to the percentages, which will hopefully shed a bit more light on the current status.
The idea here, Chairperson, is that as he is presenting the actual numbers, we'll be able to write them here so that they match your percentages, so that we are able to understand the whole issue better. But if we are going to give numbers that we are not even in the way, in the position to compare them with the percentages that we're having here, it is a future exercise.
Deputy Minister, yes, I think that, first of all, I think to thank the colleagues, because I think this is a useful exercise, and I think what is great is that CDE is giving us is focusing on the skill development aspect of transformation. I think that's exactly right, and I'm really appreciative of the direction that we're going. Secondly, I think that obviously we can get drowned in detail, and I'm a bit concerned looking at some of the following slides, because I think what's most important for us, I suggest, is to try and get a sense of the trends. So I think it was useful that we've asked through your chair if we could just have the large total on that first slide that we looked at, the very first slide, on the status of before we got into the detail. it's the slide that looks like this. I thought that was useful. And obviously it is useful to know that when we're talking about landscape architects, we're only talking about 171 professionals or registered professionals. So whereas with engineers or with architects or whatever, we're talking about sizable numbers, relatively sizable numbers. So I thought that my suggestion would be to focus on that very first slide with the additional total of candidates and professionals in the different councils. And then particularly, although you've said we don't yet know why there are particular trends, there's some very encouraging trends and there's some slightly concerning trends, but there might be good explanations for it. So I don't know if that's useful, Chair, because I'm a bit worried that it's very useful then to have the detailed breakdown of engineers, different kinds of engineering candidates and so on, but it's a lot of detail. So I think it's useful for us to have as a reference. But if we could, I'm wondering whether it wouldn't be useful just to focus on yes, on that, with the added totals which were read out to us, and then to try to think about. And I think when we get to the questions, to ask the CDE, although they say their study doesn't yet tell them why, I think it would be interesting to say why are blacks and African people not moving into architectural profession, but then, and I think a good reason, but it would be interesting to hear from the professionals on that side what reasons they think they might have and what problems they think there might be. Rather than drown in too much detail, useful to have the detail. I don't think that's helpful, Chair.
That's helpful, Deputy Minister. Thanks. Honourable Madam?
No, thank Chair. So, maybe this is an important information. And we also review this because the Acting CEO made a reference to the transformation in Daba and its resolution. So if we are looking at those particular resolutions, we're of the view that when the presentation is being done, it also talked to it to say how have we implemented those particular resolutions. And if we have not really adhered to those resolutions, what were the challenges? But you have indicated that you don't know exactly what is the reasons for those challenges that are there. But to us, it was going to assist us because you can't draw the way forward and also the implementation strategy when you don't know the challenges that is faced by you when you're trying to implement those resolutions. Because as we're saying that we need the actual numbers, it's because to me, 8 over 10 and 80 over 100, it's 80% both of them. So it doesn't give you a true picture of what is happening when you come up with a percentage. But I will request, Honorable Chair, that maybe after the presentation, maybe they send us the true reflection of what has transpired, the exact numbers, percentages that they have achieved, you know, and also maybe a column that is going to indicate, I don't know, the challenge because they are not aware of if where they understand the challenges. They indicate where they don't, maybe they don't, and then do research because we have really to do the transformation. The numbers are assisting us. We really need the numbers. Percentages is really not a true reflection of what has transpired. As I indicated, 8 over 10 and 8 over 100 is 80% both of them. So, but I think let us maybe focus, as the DM was saying, look at the first line status of transformation highlighted by the, you know, because I think it's a summary. The first one is a summary. Maybe if we can focus and try and unpack on that one, and then because that one will give us more information after the meeting.
I hope that's helpful,
Mutuk. Thank you, Chair. We'll immediately circulate the report.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, if I can just clarify, I think the intent and purpose of providing you with this summary was purely because statistics can be so confusing, in a sense. And the fact that we included all the detail behind the slide was really to say, if you've got a specific one of these categories that you want to drill into, we can easily reference that. For me, I tried to summarize this in terms of our two most highly prioritized categories or indicators of transformation, which is African representation and female representation. The slide here depicts the ratio or the trend over a five-year period. Now, what you will also see in the breakdown if you go through the reports is that data wasn't available as we would have liked it to be in all of the categories, specifically in the South African Council for Project and Construction Management and the landscape architecture professions. And the main reason that we couldn't draw this correlation was because figures was reported in different formats over the years. So we really need to go back now into the raw data and clean that up so that we can compare them as we did the other categories. You'll see in the breakdown that we've got a year-on-year comparison that shows you the percentage increase per year. It doesn't show the percentage representation per year, but the difference between the two. So what we're hoping to do by that is to see what the trend is and what the prediction can be for transformation if we carry on this current trend. Unfortunately, very little of the interventions were measured to say this intervention contributed X amount of professionally registered individuals. But we're hoping to do that going forward once we've got all the detailed baseline information in place. So if you would allow me, I'll quickly take you through the summaries and highlight the areas of concern and some of the general reasons that we are aware of behind these trends, which can be summarized most likely in three categories. But I think we'll come to that as we speak to the figures.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. As I said, the figures that you see up on display is an indication or a summary of the trends over the past 5 years from 2010-11 to 2015-16. And what we do see is that transformation has taken place to a certain extent, although not as we would have liked to see it. It's still a bit slow, specifically amongst race. Gender seems to be equaling out quite nicely amongst most of the professions. If we take the Engineering Council of South Africa, at professional registration level, the total African representation stood at 9% in 2010-11. This increased to 18% in the last count, 2015-2016. On candidate level, there was also a significant, statistically significant increase from 44 to 55%. Now, if we go back to the details on year-on-year basis, we're able to see in which year the most increase took place. And we can go back to EXA and say, for example, what project did you implement during this period? And look at what the success rates are of that in terms of a sort of retrospective analysis. The most important thing about these stats is that it provides us now or it enables us to measure our interventions going forward. If we look at female representation in the Engineering Council of South Africa at professional level, over the year in count, it increased from 3% to 6%. On the candidate level, from 19% to 22%. Now it becomes a bit more interesting, and this is the reason why we need more qualitative information behind the statistics and why we need to go back and do further research. At the South African Council for the Architects profession, if you just look at the figures, it seems like everything is just declining. Now the major reason behind this decline is largely due to deregistrations because of non-payment of professional fees. And you would note that the figures since 2010 has dropped, but it has started to increase to even out a bit more. And that's mainly due to SACAP's efforts in helping individuals re-register and making payment options much more easier or efficient for them, allowing them to pay in increments instead of a lump sum at the end of the day. But certainly there's still more issues at hand here that we need to go and investigate further. In terms of female representation, there was a slight increase, although not as significant as we would have liked to see, from 18% of the professional level in 2010 to 21% in 2015. On candidate level, from 28% in 2010 to 31% in 2015. The South African Council for the Landscape Architects profession, unfortunately, was one of the categories where we couldn't have a year-on-year comparison, which is why we thought it conducive to produce it over a five-year period. We have the figures for the 2010-2011 and for the 2015-16, but if you look at the details once you receive the report, you'll see that there's some statistics still missing. We are working hand-in-hand with both SACLP and the SACPC MP in order to substantiate this further. We had an increase on professional level of African representation of 1%, and there has been a decline in candidate level, which we're not really sure why. We think it had to do with the decline in promotion of the profession on campuses, but it's really too early to say at this stage. If we're looking at female representation, SACLAB seems to be one of the professions who is nearing the 1-to-1 ratio of 50-50% representation quite steadily. Then if we move to the quantity surveyors profession, on professionally registered individuals, Africans representation in 2010 was at 13 versus 18 in 2015, and at candidate level 51% and 53% in 2015. Interestingly, the representations at candidate level are used to make predictions for future exam registration at professional level. But once again, there are external influencing factors that can contribute to a person just dropping out of candidates along the way. And these are the things that we are paying attention to in the short term to ensure that we boost these figures significantly. If we look at female representation, in 2010 it stood at 12%, and in 2015 at 18%. At candidate level, female representation in 2010 was at 26%. Versus 34% in 2015. The South African Council for the Property Valuations Profession, in 2010 at professional registration level, Africans represented 9%, with a statistically significant increase to 15% in 2015. At candidate level, African representation stood at 36%, also a slight significant increase to 41% in 2015. Female representation increased at professional level from 14% to 20%, and at candidate level from 31% to 35%. And at the South African Council for the construction project and construction management profession, African representation increased from 9% in 2010 to 13% in 2015, and they are actually the first registration category in candidates that are nearing the 80% ratio. And we are basing this on national demographic statistics. We don't have a set sort of percentages that we are working with. We make use of census data to ensure that for our measures in terms of equality. So for African representation, we are basically looking for 80% representativeness if we are talking equality. We see that in 2015, candidate levels reached 75%, so we are nearing that mark quite steadily. There has been a slight decline in female representation at professional level at the project and construction management professions. Nothing to be too concerned about, I think that's still something worth investigating. And then at candidate level, from 14% to 28% in 2015. Now, if we are talking about challenges faced by the professional councils when it comes to transformation and implementing the transformation interventions that was proposed, it boils down to three main factors. First of all, being funding. I think most of the councils rely on the Council for the Built Environment to assist them financially in their transformation initiatives, and this is not always possible. Alternatively, they also rely on the voluntary associations to implement interventions, but the Council for the Built Environment doesn't necessarily have any control over the voluntary associations, and in some cases we also find that the professional councils are struggling to maintain what exactly is the content of the programs that the VAs are pushing out. The second most delineating problem that we are facing is reporting requirements. I mentioned that the statistics, for example, isn't reported in the same format on an annual basis in the annual reports. And this creates a problem when one is trying to draw correlations between a year-on-year basis. Additionally, I think the BFMA requirements is something that we are constantly battling with amongst the professional councils, but I think we are moving towards addressing this in a very conducive way. We've managed to secure a lot of relationships with the National Treasury, specifically Lula Mina, who is assisting us in trying to bring the professional councils to report in some sort of way that's similar to the BFMA. Then lastly, tracking, reporting, and information gaps. And this was also the main purpose behind this baseline study, was to identify major information gaps along the skills pipeline. Additionally, the problem of tracking the throughput of students from primary school even throughout to professional registration is a problem. There's a very high limit in terms of the reporting figures we get from universities, or even the Built Environment Professional Councils get from universities. That relationships are only, it only seems to be working in some of the professional councils, where they have clear relationships with the HODs that provide them with regular feedback on the registration trends and the dropout rates. But this is not the case for all of the CATPs, and we're hoping to increase that. We've made substantial progress in securing relationships with the various high-level tertiary institutions, such as University of Pretoria, UJ, UCT, and such. And we're hoping to continue that and facilitate this kind of relationship between the professional councils and the universities. And once again, reporting. I'm hoping that Priscilla will mention some of the initiatives we are planning to address these three major trends. But yeah, I think that's pretty much it from my side. I don't think there's any specific questions that I'd like to delve into.
Thank you, sir. Madam, you want to add something?
Thank you, Chair. I don't know whether the Honourable Members would want to ask around the issues of the statistics. Otherwise, I can continue with the presentation.
Is there anything that you want to ask at this stage? Going forward?
I'm going, I'm just about to go. If I could just, and my apologies once more for having to leave early. Now again, I think, obviously we've been a bit drowned in detail, but then the verbal summary was very useful and based obviously on the steps. I think, and this is very useful also to the ministry in our relationship to the CBE. So I think the further discussions that we need to have are what are the professional strategic priorities in the built environment profession? In other words, is it a problem if we're not producing tens of thousands of African landscape architects? I happen to think it's an important area, although I wonder why we have two different councils for architects and landscape, but maybe that's another matter. So I think obviously the statistics on their own aren't going to give it to you, but it's part of our political responsibility as a public entity to say what are the scarce skills? What are the skills that we require for transformation in that broader sense of the word to transform the built environment, basically? So it's intended from the public sector, property valuers, for instance. That's a scarce skill in the public sector, which is why we get taken for a ride a great deal of the time. So if we can begin to have that discussion as well. The second thing is also to track the throughput, which you've alluded to, between candidacy and becoming registered professional. Are there still, this is often what we hear, that there are roadblocks and blockages, particularly for black candidates, in being able to register as professionals. So it would be useful to see that. And generally it's encouraging. Where we're seeing increased numbers of candidates, we've also seen increased numbers of registration. Presumably there's a bit of a throughput, but if we could have a more refined look at that, that would be useful. Then other things, I mean, for instance, I suspect that the significant increase in, say, African project management, Kenya in particular, is because we're starting to recognize prior learning as a qualification. Remember when the colleague from that council spoke, she was very passionate about telling us, the registrar from that council, saying that there are large numbers of construction workers, basically, who've got 40 years of experience on the site, and they were very keen to begin to qualify them as on-site project managers, particularly in regard to health and safety standards and so on. So if we could begin to think strategically as well, and not just, I'm not suggesting, oh, but not just mechanically in terms of how many candidates are women now and the past and so on. I think, yeah, I hope the colleagues have got the point, because I think, but just to say this is starting to be extremely useful, I think, from us, I can't be for MPs, but also for the department and ministry, to start to have a strategic sense of what is going on in terms of transformation, in this good sense of the word transformation, which is about really developing the skills in ways that enable serious transformation.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, for a useful contribution, as usual. Honorable Sultani, you may take your leave when you are ready, Deputy Minister.
Thank you, sir. The reason I lifted my hand is because I'm looking at the time. I know the Deputy Minister is going to be leaving in the next 2.5 minutes. I've got a question on the presentation, which can better be handled, I think, by the Deputy Minister himself. On the suggestion that technical quality, when bids are assessed, should precede price considerations. Now, this becomes a kind of a legal issue when it comes to the PMFA. And what I want to know from the Deputy Minister is whether you are able to accommodate that when you structure and consider, you know, bids. Because it's useless for them to say this is what they would like to see happening, only to find that the law, on the other hand, is you go according to the book. Are you able to, to accommodate that?
To someone who's actually not deeply informed in this area, but I mean, it's exactly a good question. First of all, it's useful to have professional input from their side, I mean, and to make that recommendation, I think. And also, insofar as they're able to track the problems that occur when that doesn't happen, and one is aware of what those might be. But secondly, as you know, this is where I'm not as on top of the detail as I should be. I know that the department is engaging very actively with National Treasury and with the Chief Procurement Officer as well. We've been the third target when it comes to the Chief Procurement Officer. Because we're saying that the way in which you contract and tender and contract for built environment construction type things is different from purchasing chemicals, files and folders, and the PFMA tends to treat everything a little bit as if it was all pens and pencils that government is purchasing, and there's sympathy from Treasury. So I'm not on top of the detail, and your question is exactly the correct one. We mustn't allow, the PFMA is important, but we mustn't allow the PFMA to treat everything as one size fits all, and therefore run into the kinds of important things. And I'm sure you're actually more on top of the details, perhaps, and in particular the challenges that come. But thanks for raising that. And I think this is an ongoing question, and I'm sure the Honourable Sultani will continue to pose it. But our CFO and the PMTE colleagues are the ones who are engaging actively. And as I say, I'm a little bit distant from this, but I think it's exactly a challenge. I'm sure the colleagues will also.
Thanks for the contribution, but just to add, to say that CBE can articulate the challenges and difficulties that they encounter in the field in regard to current legislation, in regard to regulation. But the Portfolio Committee also has a responsibility to deal with unintended consequences of laws and regulations. So it becomes a compact that everyone around the table needs to articulate as to where there are blockages to transformation delivery, so it can't be their function alone. Their responsibility is to foreground the challenges, and then the Portfolio Committee also has to carry out its responsibility.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, dear, for your input. Chair, can I then give you an opportunity to continue with the presentation?
Maybe.
I think the honourable member, I think, asked us about the whether the importance of the Indaba recommendations. Chair, can I just say, highlight that since that time, the CBE, together with the Department of Public Works, we have taken the Indaba recommendations very seriously. We have involved the six Built Environment Professional Council. We have tried to mobilize the industry to ensure that we implement the skills pipeline strategy. There are key interventions that we have taken into consideration to make sure that we lead on the transformation agenda. So our entire focus is to implement the skills pipeline strategy. But I think it is important to highlight that it is important for all the key role players to work together, to cooperate, to collaborate, so that we are able to make the impact. Chair, I would want us to quickly look into the skills pipeline that was presented to the stakeholders by the CBE. This skills pipeline strategy talks to the three areas: the push strategy, the intermediate strategy, and the pull strategy. So public works, and now we are moving to other governments that are delivering infrastructure. We are moving to the municipalities in trying to introduce the skills pipeline strategy. So what we are saying is that in order for us to make an impact in terms of transformation, we cannot just focus only on the registration of professionals. It is important that professionals are registered, but we need to go all the way back. We need to look into the school system, because when we look at the throughput, we get the quality education from the lower levels of education. So as a result, if we want to make an impact in terms of transformation, we have to look at our school systems. Chair, that is why it is important, especially at this level, to request our political heads to start engaging other departments, like the Department of Education, because this cannot be done by public works only. This cannot be done by the councils only. But we need to engage other departments, like the Department of Basic Education. So we are saying here we need to start our intervention there as well. So we also have to look into the issues of the quality of math and science at the matric level. When the students have enrolled at various built environment institutions, the higher institutions of higher learning, we also have to have interest in those students. When they graduate, we need to know where they are going to be mentored. So the push strategy looks into those three areas: the lower levels of education, matriculation, and the graduation level. And when we have the intermediate strategy, which then looks into the candidacy area of the professionals. And then the last one is the pull strategy. This one looks into those who are registered. But I think my colleague here highlighted that there are also a number of practitioners, built environment practitioners, who are not registered. We need to be also interested in those professionals who are not registered. So this is the skills pipeline that we introduced in 2010, and we are still using this skills pipeline strategy to make sure that we monitor the transformation within the built environment. So I highlighted the transformation within the built environment through skills development, and I also alluded to the CIDP, which there is a standard that the CIDP is promoting that every tender that goes out, it should have a certain percentage for skills development. This is there, but unfortunately it is not well, it is not monitored. So as the government, I think that was the question that was asked by Honorable Fitlan, that as much as we have these standards and policies, but it is about the implementation of them and the monitoring, whether we really do implement those policies. But what we're saying in terms of the skills development is that it is also, it must have tangible outcomes such as degrees, diplomas, certificates to help the candidates on their journey to registration. We also mentioned the recognition of prior learning. There have been a number of practitioners who have been in the field, but they have not been given certificates to enable them to be registered as professional. So what our focus currently, together with the 60 EPCs, is to start to go back and to look at the interventions that are necessary so that we increase the number of registered professionals. Chair, I want to highlight that I think currently there is a debate whether people should register or not. But I believe that as CBE, as Public Works, we do encourage the registration of professionals, because that is the only way in which we are able to hold them accountable if they are registered. It is the only way in which we'll be able to measure their competences. Remember, we said our mandate is to promote public safety. So we can. It is difficult to hold a person accountable if that person is not registered. So that is why it is important for us to really mobilize, encourage practitioners to register. But we also understand that they have to be skilled, thus the recognition of prior learning, it needs to be in some way recognized by giving people certificates. So when we look at the skills pipeline, I spoke about the interventions at the school level. We are saying here, Chair, I want to highlight that all of these things are being implemented by Public Works, by CBE, and by Professional Council. But I think where we are, we just want to, it is the scale at which we are doing this intervention. That is why we need other departments to help us so that we are able to increase the impact of this intervention. So at school level, we are saying we are creating awareness. We are working together with some of the VAs in creating awareness of built environment professionals. It will also take us into improving the curriculum at that level. I'm telling you right now that the child at maybe grade R, or children at grade R, they know about the doctor, the nurses, and other professions out there. But I don't know how many of them know about the engineers, how many of them know about property valuers. So it means in our curriculum, in our storytelling, at that level, we need to start introducing the built environment profession so that when they move to high school level, at least they understand that there are engineers out there. So what you are saying is that it is important that we involve the Department of Education so that we start to look into the curriculum, what is contained in that curriculum, and start to influence the education at that level. We also look at the math and science. I think I've mentioned this. Public Works runs a math and science program. CBE also has a math and science program, but it is like a drop in the ocean. So we need to mobilize more key role players so that we increase the number of programs that are aiming at improving math and science. And then at tertiary level, Chair, it talks to supporting students with bursaries. Again, I want to say that the Department of Public Works in January, they gave out a bursary for students to go to tertiary institutions, but we still need more. especially with the Seeds Must Fall campaign, I think we need more funding so that we are able to support our students to do built environment careers. There are also programs that we are trying to introduce, the Adopt a Student program, because one of the issues of the challenges is that, especially when it comes to those learners that are at the University of Technology, they need to be exposed to workplace training. So we need all of us to be able to make sure that the industry out there adopts children, adopts their students, so that they are able to be exposed to this profession. The accreditation, CBE always monitor the accreditation of higher institutions of learning to make sure that no child or no student goes through training in a place where they don't have accreditation. I've mentioned the bursary schemes, Chair. There is a tutorial model which is has been adopted by the Chartered Accountants. So as the built environment, we are saying, let us adopt this model. What this model is saying is that they have developed a fund. It's like an NPO fund where they help all students who are taking accounting. So as the built environment, we have introduced this this concept, so we also want to take it forward and say that we can create an NGO or an NPO that will help us to mobilize the sector, to mobilize even international help, so that our students are able to be supported throughout their careers. As workplace training, Chair, this talks to the structured candidacy workplace framework. We have mentioned that here previously there were a lot of candidates that were working in the public sector, and they've been there for a number of years. Unfortunately, they were not able, sometimes we find that they would find it difficult to register as professionals. So as CBE, we have introduced the structured candidacy workplace training, workplace framework, so that it helps the candidacy, especially in the public sector, to be registered. So this is a program, this is a structured program that we are introducing to government departments so that they help their own candidates to go through the candidacy program and are able to register within a record time. Chair, I'm not reading all the bullets, but I will request the honourable members to ask questions. I'm just now going through the presentation. And then at professional level, we are supporting the continuous professional development. Currently, this is run by the professional councils through their VAs. But as the government, we are saying we need to be involved. We need to get involved so that we try and target, we try and support, especially the skills that are scarce within our nation. So we can do this through the CPD programs, which is the Continuous Professional Development. From time to time, there are issues that come out of the government, which become the government priorities. Professionals cannot go back to universities, so we need to set aside programs that will help these professionals to be aligned with the government priorities. And this can be done through continuous professional development programs. Chair, allow me to skip this slide. I think I've spoken to the skills development initiatives and within the public sector. So our target is to work with municipalities, is to work with provincial departments, is to work with national departments and state-owned enterprises, so that we push those candidates who have been working there for a number of times, for a number of years. So what we are also doing as CBE, we facilitate the engagement between those candidates with the Chief Professional Council, so that they help them through their journey towards their registration. Chair, this is a proposed approach in fast-tracking transformation. This is taken from our skills pipeline, but what we are saying is that we cannot do everything at once. So we need to prioritize the quick wins. So the quick wins here, they form part of our short-term strategy. So our focus currently, together with the Department of Public Works, is to really help the candidates to be registered, because they've done the work. Some of them have been there for a number of years. So our focus currently is to really make sure that they go, number one, they are registered with their professional councils, but we also help them to do the right work that will enable them to be registered. Because sometimes we find that although they are working within the public sector, but they are not exposed to the outcomes that are required by their professional councils. So this structured workplace program that is introduced by CBE is to help them to tie their programs, to design the plans that will help them to be registerable within a short period of time. So our focus, which is a short term, is to look into the graduates and the candidates. We help the graduates by giving out bursaries, by making sure that we mobilize the sector to give them bursaries. And then the midterm is a strategy, is to look into the professionals, is to upskill the professionals so that they are relevant to the priorities of the government. But it is also to look at the math and science program, because we are saying that for us to have engineers, for us to have quantity surveyors, we need to produce good math and science students. So that is also our midterm strategy. And then the long-term strategy, Chair, is to look into the school system about trying to influence our children at an early stage. We acknowledge that it will not happen overnight, but we need to start doing it so that in 10 years' time we'll reap the results. Chair, please allow me to stop here for a minute. And let me just request a question.
Thank you very much, presenters, for the input that was made. Honorable members, your opportunity for comments, questions, the first hand that was up was that of the honorable qualified, followed by Edwards and followed by members here and for that.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for that. I'm quite heartened by the presentation, I must say, and the figures all seem to be going in the right direction. A couple of questions. You use a calendar year instead of a financial year. Well, all the annual reports are done in the financial year, so that was a bit odd and makes it very tricky to really truly compare year on year. So perhaps an explanation for that. Speak to the South African Council for the Landscape Architectural Profession. Why does that remain so small? I mean, compared to the others, it's this minuscule council. I'm not sure why. Is there just not the demand? I don't know. Equally, there's a decline in registration of candidates and professionals reported a lot, but certainly by the South African Council for the Property Values Profession. Is that also a case where people are not being assisted in registering, or do we not have the graduates coming through? What's the situation? Certainly we're seeing actually declining numbers in registration of both candidates and professionals across the board. Now, I'm sure you've workshopped it. Please, the reasons. Is it something we should be focusing on? Are you focusing on it? Is it a reflection of our poor maths and science results? We're what's either worst or second worst in the world? Is it an education issue? You spoke of a decline at some stage, one of you spoke of a decline in presentations at a campus level, attracting the students in. Is that the tertiary education entity's job or your job? Maybe you should be meeting with them, I'm not sure. But obviously that has to change somehow, because that's when you infuse the kids into going into a certain career. I'm wondering, we're seeing an increased number of fraudulent so-called training standards, fake nursing schools, fake this, fake that, and these poor children literally fork out thousands, come out with a certificate, and then they find it was never registered, and they go back and the offices are empty. Are you having that problem? If so, how are you dealing with it? And on the other side, there seem to be a number of accredited institutions which are discontinuing their offer of various relevant diplomas that people need in this industry. How is that being dealt with? And finally, what involvement, if any, are you as an entity having with the construction site invasions and the death threats being experienced? It's been going on for about 2 years now in Durban. I know the head of the Master Builders Association has had her life threatened, so she backed off. Literally, people are holding guns to people's heads, and they're invading construction sites and holding guns to people's heads and saying, unless you hire our people as of tomorrow and give us 20% of the tender, you'll all die. We know where your wife is. We'll kill her. We know where your children go to school. It's a group from who live in Umnazi and called the Delango Kubona Business Forum. They claim to be all ex-cons, and they are demanding that they be given tenders or chunks of tenders and all the work. And I know all the professionals, they've met with them. There is a very highly regarded in Durban black builder. There are white builders, there are Indian builders, and they meet, and they all say, but you're not registered. We can't legally hire you anyway. You have no experience, no, but you have to give us the jobs. So what is the situation? Are you involved in trying to, I know that the Premier at one stage said he's going to stamp these thugs out, or I don't even know if he's the Premier still, but either way, it's not happening. So I wondered if you were at all aware of the situation, what you're doing about it. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Member. Just let it, she said this is a group of ex-convicts.
That's what they claim, yes. It's on their website. They're all apparently, they claim to be, I'm not saying they are, but they claim to be all ex-cons, and they say they're right now to get the tenders, and they've now spread to many areas. They've stopped construction of any government building, the Springfield Park, they've stopped that for a very long time, or they keep invading day after day, and they're spreading out, and they say they're now going to move down to the Eastern Cape, and then to Johannesburg, and they're going to do the same thing. So I think it needs to be addressed, and good luck with that.
Well, this is, to use the word advisedly, this is nonsense. It means that there's no law and order.
Mm-hmm.
What are the law enforcement agencies doing?
Thank you.
I can't force myself into the employ of anybody, whether I've been an ex-convict or ex-whatever, you see, I can't do this.
Chair, if I may, I did speak personally with the Acting National Peace Commission. Oh, sorry.
I did speak in such a cozy room, I didn't say neither. I spoke personally with the Acting National Peace Commissioner, who said that they would set up a special task force, because the acting provincial head just says to the lawyers, we'll talk to your local police station, which has all of three officers in it, against a gang of 50 or 60. They're not even going to go out the door. Not a chance. So I went above him and I did speak, but I don't know if that's going to happen, and I just wondered if pressure from the big guys at that side might not assist, because it has the, it's not only, it's government building works, certainly, but also private, and they have just halted at the casino on the Durban beachfront. They were doing a multi-hundred million trillion rand extension and shopping mall, etc., and that's all come to a grinding halt because they were invaded, and they said, you know what, we'll just put the money somewhere else. And it's losing jobs for professionals, and it's very sad to see. So I'm interested to see if they can do something.
Well, it's the first time I hear about this, but I think what we should do as this portfolio committee is kindly request the facts from you, the information that you have, and then write the formal letter to the chairperson of the police portfolio committee, and then escalate the matter up to the minister and say this is the issue of national importance, what's being done about this. We can't just leave it to individual attempts, so that we have a formal track record of having taken up this issue. Yeah, from this, from the basis of what you have said, I can bet you, Mr. Fatak, that before we go to the next election, there will be a political party of TAG, like others have attempted before. So this, they are united, so they are going to form themselves into some convinced political party. And everybody will seem to provide jobs. It's a sad situation, but we have to take our responsibility, as I suggested. The next in line was Honorable Adams.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the presenters of the CBE presentation. Chairperson, the transformation goals are set out here to ensure quality, equality, inclusivity, sustainability, safety and accountability. And we heard by the end of last week of the tragic accident that happened in Durban. You as the CBE that regulates the construction industry, you should emphasize, I think, this, and it happened with employees of the Department of Public Works, so it's part of our family, and it is very, very tragic.
Thank you. Just a slight correction, they don't regulate the industry, it's the CIDD.
Oh, okay, sorry. But Chairperson, the acting CEO is acting. When will the acting status be permanent? If she can give us an indication of that, please, or anyone.
I was just about to say, again, Honourable Member, she can't say when she'll be made permanent.
No.
The gentleman who left here. The Deputy Minister or the Minister, that question should be directed at them. They are just acting. So it's the Ministry that has to give us an answer.
No, but
is that she can't. She has been appointed the acting CEO. In that position, she can't be writing a letter to the minister and say, when are you making me permanent? Because the ministry will say that we can put you in an acting position, we can advertise the position and fill it with somebody else. So I'm merely saying that there are limitations as to what she can do.
Yeah.
Where we should be putting the pressure is on the ministry.
The Chairperson, you, I
on
them, yeah. I can't believe you take that. I'm not sure if you're planning. But you didn't take me. kandidatuur lê slegs vir hierdie tyd met dit gesindes, by die tyd met dit gesindes, dit wat ek bedoel.
Ja.
Nie dat sy iets aan haar aanstelling kan doen. I'm unfortunately challenged with regard to language, but I'll put what I want to say. Chairperson, this presentation says practical steps to address the transformation of built environments. And there are a few steps, but I would have liked them to put it number one. The clear step, not hidden within the information. Then, Chairperson, I was covered by the Honourable Cola Barnett. In our research report, we got this news that accreditation in, from certain tertiary institutions is withdrawn. Now, how does that, what impact does it have on the industry? And what happens to that when suddenly the accreditation is withdrawn? And to me, Chairperson, this is a thing between the CBE and higher education. Why was it withdrawn? Was the curriculum not up to standard? Then, Chairperson, the fact that this thing isn't numbered really, this empowering me. Then, the Indaba of 2010, there were a few key issues. Now, you know, things were mentioned here. If we could have ticked off everything that was done, because it was already in 2010, and we are now in 2017, and then you get something that says this should be done and that should be done. Chairperson, and the fact that I don't want to sound negative, really. I don't want to sound negative, but I think that at this stage, for example, on the tertiary education level, there should be a monetary system to focus on the entire pool of applicants. Who must do it? Isn't it done already when that goals was set? And I think the CBE as well as Public Works agreed to it that there should be some monitoring system of candidates. And I would like the presenters to explain to me what is a candidate. What is a candidate and when does a candidate promote to a professional? And I would like them to look into that, because I think I, for the last 3 years, Jefferson, I speak about this. There is somebody, someone is gatekeeping. There is a gatekeeping of candidates to promote to professionals. You should focus into that. Thank you, Jefferson.
Honourable members, thank you very much for your contribution. The next was Honourable Nemasiel.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you so much for the presentation. I've got just two or three questions. The slides are not numbered. I'll just indicate my question. There is someone where they talk about mentoring and training of young graduates and small firms, somehow to assist them in a way. So I wanted to check how are they going to do this thing so that those small firms and also the young graduates are not exploited in the process. How is it going to be done? The issue of recognition of prior learning, to me it always looks like just a concept. I don't know how it is being done. We have got so many people who are in this field who have been doing the work for many, many years, and I don't remember any of them being given a certificate because of their prior learning experience. So can you clarify it as on how these people should go about to get their certification for this recognition of private name? What are they supposed to be doing? What steps are they supposed to follow in order for this to be realistic? Because to me, it's just one of the concepts. The other issue, Honorable Chair, is about this deregistration of professionals. Some of them, they don't even register at all. What could be the cause of them not registering or even deregistering? Because indeed, if they are not registered, you are not going to be in the position to be able to know them or even to count them when you say we have got so many. But what makes them not to register or to deregister? Can we be maybe in the position to address the situation so that we arrest that going forward? The learners or students that have been given a bursaries, is it possible to furnish us with the number of those students in each and every field? How many is this? How many is this? If we have the information today, but if we don't have, we can have it at a later stage. With those percentages, I'm glad that you have promised that you will give us a comprehensive report in the future with the real number, so that we can be in the position to see as to whether are we really addressing this transformation or not. With the numbers, we'll be able to say. To me, when I look at this, it is as if we are not going far about this issue. But if we can have that report, then we'll be able to see what is actually happening in this field. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, very much, honourable members. Honourable for that.
Thank you, Chair. I'll hope that the entity in front of us fully realizes how strategically important they are in the transformational agenda of South Africa. I must give credit, Chair, to so ever conceptualize that there should be such an entity. Consequently, or rather flowing from there, there's quite a lot expected of you. And our questions are not about criticizing you, but more about strengthening your role. That's where I'm coming from. Because without your intervention, we may not see the desired results in transformation. And I'm saying this, Honorable Chair, because the delivery mode of government when it comes to infrastructure is by engaging the private sector. And that's where it's happening. Government on their own do not build bridges. They procure. Here is therefore my question to you. Why are employees not recognized as critical stakeholders by ourselves? Because you know that there is a strong union movement in South Africa and in the construction industry in particular. But in your list of recognized stakeholders, I don't see employees there. The people who are supposed to benefit from it all. And I'm saying this because those people stand right at the pinnacle, right at the end of the beneficiation process. Take them through school, training, everything such that after, at the end of the day, they are either employed, qualified to be there, or they're running their own businesses. And yet you have, those are the two avenues after schooling. And I'm not asking this question in a critical, accurate manner, but you may be having respectable reasons why you have not recognized them as critical stakeholders. Now, next, following to that one, after that one, I've gone through your presentation. I have not been able to find a bullet point that tells us exactly how you interact as this institution with the private sector. You seem to be circumventing, doing everything
to advance the cause of government, assisting government in this delivery of infrastructure and what. But I do not see you on this presentation how you engage with the people who employ these professionals. We would love to know how you do it, because I find it missing, and I thought it would be one bullet point or even a page dedicated to that. You've identified employers as critical stakeholders, but you don't spend much time telling us exactly how you engage with them. Because we can do all the talk, you know, in our comfortable government positions, including yourselves. But if the private sector have not bought in real terms, then we still have a host of qualified graduates who are not employed. I've already spoken to the issue of congruence or otherwise of your suggestion that, you know, bids, the processing of bids should be, you know, should predate, you know, where the, should be predated by technical qualification. It is not my intention to expatiate on that. I've stressed with the DM when it went out that this matter needs to be factored into the probably amendment of the PMFA. My comment on transformation, I agree with I'm comfortable with that, and I must say I thank you for coming back, you know, this, because it's useless for us to keep talking about transformation when the very different political parties could be having, you know, their own different interpretations, and then yourselves and then government, you know, I'm in agreement with this. Now, what is the biggest stumbling block in the transformation agenda? You've given us those steps at the end, the school level, the intermediate, and then finally. What have you identified as the biggest stumbling block so that we as committee can assist to unblock that if need be? You know, you must have identified something. The percentages tell us that. We hardly say 100% or graduation of figures towards 100%. There must be something that you have identified as the biggest stumbling block. My colleague has already spoken to institutions that have been closed down, like DART and UJ. Now, I'm not sure if I've put this question to yourselves or to the CIDB. How do you relate with the CIDB? Because they also carry this mandate of trying to transform the construction industry. And you know, that's why I would love to know to what extent you collaborate with them. Lastly, and very critically, what percentage of professionals that come out of college actually get employed or start own businesses? Now, I'm asking this because when I was in Canada in 2009, what we had there, when there was a convocation of colleges, was that their lecturers spent 60% of their time out there and only 40% on campus. What are they doing out there? They're looking for potential placements of their students, graduates. That's their function, so that they can immediately adjust the curricula, you know. If you go there, you'll not find them still teaching what they were teaching, you know, 10 years ago. Because things have changed. You know, talking to a businessman that I'm trying to attract down to Barawa the other day, he told me that he came across a German invention of a machine that produces one chair every 1.2 minutes. A chair. 1.2 minutes. I'm sure that chair, that equipment cost 8 million. That equipment was not there probably 10, 20 years ago. So technology is there, you know, and that's why I say, you know, I'm keen to know to what extent do you intervene even in the curricula. I'm happy with what you have said, but obviously my question asks for more, you know, for more, you know. So do you actually check the students to say they started off there, a certain percentage of them actually get placed
And if they don't get placed, what is the problem? Because that is the ultimate outcome that we're looking for. Thank you very much for the opportunity, sir.
Thank you very much. Shall we take your rejoinder?
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the questions. We will try, Chair, to respond to all. Chair, I think, well, the first question from Honorable Bana was the issue of the years. Whether are we presenting the calendar year or the financial year. When we do our work, we, even with the Built Environment Professional Councils now, we end up developing our annual plans. So our annual plans, they talk to the financial years. Yeah, so although we are presented there in terms of the calendar years, but we are also looking into the financial years. So to answer your question, it's about the financial years that we use in terms of compiling our information.
Second, please, it seems that Honorable Kuala Barnett would
like... The way you have presented, we have only used the year, the calendar year.
In this presentation.
In the presentation, yes.
That was my question. Why would you do that? Because everything we deal with is in the financial
year.
And now we're looking at the calendar year, and it makes a mass of figures even more tricky for us to stomach.
I think, Honourable Member, we've noted that, and it was a mistake on our part. We should have actually reported it in terms of financial years. These were based on the figures reported in the annual reports, mostly, as well as various other sources. So, in essence, it is the financial year that we are representing here.
Yeah, I'll ask my colleague to respond to the issue of the... State Club and the property developers, the declining of numbers.
Thank you, ma'am. Specifically in terms of the landscape architect's profession, it came out that only one institution is currently offering this course, and it seems to be the University of Pretoria. They've only got 20 seats available and they're struggling to fill this. Currently, Cape Town University of Technology is planning on converting their landscape technology program to a landscape architectural program with 50 seats, but this will only be happening somewhere later this year. And then the university, or the Tshwane University of Technology, have been issued a directive to undertake a feasibility assessment to develop a landscape architectural program in Tshwane in order to offer a similar opportunity geographically in the US local profession. So that's the reason we've got the current.
The fraudulent schools, current SCCBE, we have not yet encountered fraudulent schools, but what we are doing, we are working, that's why we are participating on the accreditation visits by the professional council, so that we also understand the issues that come out of those schools. But we are also working closely with the Council for Higher Education, because the Council for Higher Education is mandated to accredit schools. So we are working. There was one case that was sent to us by one of the private schools that was refused accreditation. And we took that case back to the Council for Higher Education. But there are requirements as well that have to be, you know, the requirements for you to get the accreditation. So you have to have, you know, the equipment and everything depending on the course that you are providing. So we try to be on the lookout for those fly-by-night schools. But that was one case that we attended to, and it was not, they approached us because of the, yeah, so yes. And then the discontinuing diplomas, we are also aware of that case where there are some diplomas that are that have been discontinued on the, I think, from all the coastal colleges. But we are again working with the Council for Higher Education because there is an outcry out there for these courses to be restored in those institutions. So we, so there is a continuous engagement with CAG on those areas. And then,
look, it strikes me that you know, universities and these sorts of institutions that either do diplomas, degrees, whatever. When you were saying Pretoria, University of Pretoria only offers 20 seats and can't even fill those, you know, no university is going to offer 500 seats if only three people want to do the degree. So that's basic economics. So again, who's encouraging people to take up these careers? And if they do, if all 20 had gone in and filled those seats, would they have jobs waiting for them? That's the main thing, because there's no point in graduating if there's not going to be a job for the next 20 years. And that, in fact, landscape architecture, if that's what it is, seems to be getting smaller and smaller, shrinking. So maybe it's a bad thing for someone to go into as a career. So I'm sure you guys have workshopped this, but I just think it's a huge issue that, and a balancing act for the educational institutions. And someone who wants a career, but now am I going to have a job? So, yeah, tricky one.
Honourable members, if I can just add one thing that might shed some light on a lot of the questions that's being posed. In terms of the skills audit report that was produced by CBE in 2008, we are in the process, along with DPW, to review that report so that we can come to an up-to-date realization of what the skills shortage or skills demand is actually looking like. When we're talking about landscape architecture and a lot of the other professions as well, the fact that these seats are not being filled really boils down to a lack of awareness. We're not seeing career guidance or awareness campaigns being rolled out at schools. We're not seeing them being rolled out at tertiary institutions. Through my interactions with the tertiary institutions, specifically the University of Pretoria, who I met with last week, the faculty of EBIT, they do send out people to schools, but the councils are unable to send a representative with. So it's very limited exposure that's being provided to these children. We're hoping to strengthen that in the future, but certainly that requires capacity, that requires manpower. And with most of the councils not having a dedicated transformation person within their institution, and CBE currently only having myself, it becomes much more difficult to sort of service the entire nation, specifically rural areas.
If I may just add on what my colleague has said, I think it goes back to, I think it's Honorable Adam or Masekla who said that we are still, Masekela, my apologies, that we are still talking about the shoot. It's because although that we have started with those small steps, but we are saying we still have to increase the intervention. So what my colleague is saying right now is that we do have career guidance, for example, but we understand that we need to increase our scope of work. But that will also take us to form partnerships, because as CBE alone, we understand that we'll never be able to really go through all. We have 9 provinces. We have urban, we have peri-urban, we have rural areas. So we must devise ways of multiplying ourselves. And we can only do that by forging partnerships. And going forward, this is what we are trying to do, so that we make sure that we create awareness, because students will never register as property valuers if they don't know about the degree, you know. So that's what we are continuously doing. I think the issue of the debts in construction sites, the chair, I think, has given us a way forward on that one, that for us to get the report. But I think in this case, we will work together with the CITB to make sure that they also play their part. The Honorable Adams, I think, spoke about the clear steps that we have not highlighted them. I will also want to go back to the report that we have circulated with the presentation. If it has not been circulated, I will ask UMPO to circulate the report. There are two reports that we have. The one that goes with this presentation, we have highlighted the action plan, because the action plan then it highlights, it gives you what needs to be done, by who and by when. So I think after this, I'll just ask him for to send that report through to the honorable members. And then the definition of a candidate. A candidate is a person or a graduate. I don't think it only applies to built environment professions. I think in other professions as well. But it's somebody who has gone through the academic training. Once that person has completed their studies, then they register with the relevant professional council that is relevant to their field of study. So that person then has to go through a number of training. Now, in terms the training that you are looking for is around the issues of skills, because at school it's more the theory. So once that person starts working, it's about exposing that person to the relevant skills. So those skills will help that person to be registered as a professional. It depends on the professional council. Others, it takes them 3 years, others 4 years. So if it's a 3-year program, it means that person will have to go through a number of skills training, so that when that person sits for an exam after 3 years, they would have been exposed to those skills. So that person then is a candidate. The minute he passes the exam, then he changes from being a candidate to a professional practitioner. The deregistration, do you want to speak to that? I'll ask my colleague to speak to the issue of deregistration of professionals.
Thank you, ma'am. In terms of deregistrations, once again, there's a lot of external factors that plays a role here, but the most prominent ones that we've realized is, first of all, the lack of awareness in terms of the benefits of registration. And I'm being very frank about this. I'm yet to see a pamphlet from any one of the councils to me to say, this is the benefits of being a registered professional. And I'm speaking as well out of personal experience. I'm a psychologist in the final stages of my PhD, and I'm not registered because I don't know what the benefits are. It's the same with my profession. It's not being communicated to me. I'm registered with voluntary associations because they do provide me entrance into certain academic fields and publications and such. But as from the HPCSA side, I've never had a communication to say, listen, this and this is a benefit to pay that X amount of money per year. And the same goes for the professional council. Besides that, it's the fees that's being paid. If you're paying something and you don't know what you're paying it for, what's the use of paying it? Additionally, it has been noted, and I'm not sure how valid this is, that the fees are too high. And some of the councils are controlling for this by making payments of possible in increments, such as, I think it's the architects profession and SACBCMP. But once again, there is a lot more investigation that we need to do into these regions. Hopefully by this time next year, we will have a database of some of the deregistered individuals, some of the individuals that's unemployed and registered, and we'll be able to have focus groups with some of them to find out what the exact reasons for this is. Another difficulty that we are facing is that the councils are very much more in tune or focused on their registered professionals. Some of them don't even keep a database of deregistrations because they feel it's outside of their mandate. And we're hoping to address this within the short term to make sure that that kind of information gets captured and monitored and updated on a regular basis.
Thanks. Maybe to add on the issue of the deregistration, I think, Chair, we have presented the issue of the identification of work in this committee, the importance of the identification of work. If that could be accepted by the Competition Commission, then that would be a draw card for the Professional Council or for registration of professionals. I think currently there are professionals who are saying that there is no need if there is no work that is identified for registered persons. So they are not motivated to do that. But once the competition, because we are currently engaging with the Competition Commission to reverse their decision, because they made a decision of rejecting the identification of work, which is the work that needs to be set aside for competent persons. And the competency is, you are tested your competency through registration, through a registration process. So that is another issue, Chair, that is making it difficult for professional councils to retain registered persons. On the issue of RPL, I want to announce that, or to pronounce that the professional councils, actually they have started with the RPL process. Last time when we were here with the six Built Environment Professional Councils, I think they highlighted that they do have a program to register or to recognize prior learning. But I think what could be helpful for us as CBE is, I don't know how we can get more information, especially of those who are still struggling with the registration through RPL. So it will take us, I think, to engage more stakeholders. And we are planning to have a stakeholder in Daba sometime in August. And we are hoping that we will get this kind of information of people who are aggrieved by the registration processes, and then be able then to include them together with what the professional councils have already started. But the programs are now up and running in the six Built Environment Professional Councils. Yeah, and then the Mr. Fitanis. I think I want to agree with you that I think currently we have not engaged the private sector that well, but we have started working with them, especially through our intense program, because they are helping us in terms of placing the interns. So we have partnerships with them. But yes, we need to increase our engagement with them, because we believe that they play a key role, especially around the issues of providing bursaries, the issues of creating awareness. I think what my colleague was saying, that even when we go out to communities, we need them on our side, because they are the practitioners. So we have started to work with a few of them, but it's still a few, but we are hoping to increase that engagement with them. The stumbling block in the issue of the registration, I think you spoke about registration. What is the stumbling block? want to have a round stop from now. You also ask about the percentage of graduates that start their own businesses.
Thank you, ma'am. I think I'll take those two questions. If we're looking at the biggest stumbling blocks that we've identified thus far in terms of transformation, it boils down to a lack of awareness amongst all individuals throughout the pipeline. And it's about the professions, it's about being the benefits of being registered, about how you become a registered professional, the process to follow. Additionally, about cooperation, and that's cooperation between all the role players. We find the private sector has got their own interventions, tertiary institutions has got their own interventions, the VEPCs has got their own interventions, CBE has got pilot programs, and no one is really coming together and saying, listen, how can we collaborate and how can we make the best of this intervention and work together and focus it? Once again, it's about the attractiveness, and because we are not collaborating, it leads to very scattered interventions. So you'll find that for one institution, transformation has got a certain definition and they've got a certain goal to achieve, and for another institution, it's a different one. And it's bringing together these different institutions and these different role players to say, what are we all doing and how can we work together? And we're trying to do that through, first of all, our Transformation Steering Committee, through actively forming partnerships with private sector, although, and I have to be frank about this, my biggest stumbling block that I've personally experienced is the bad rep that CBE has amongst these private institutions and even tertiary institutions. I mean, one of the I think it was actually the Dean at the University of Pretoria, was quite surprised that I came to visit him. But it's through establishing these relationships and through promising them in a sense, or assuring them in a sense, that CBE is actually committed to this and committed to providing assistance, that we will reach success at the end of the day. We've got a couple of interventions that's detailed within the program where we hope to attract private sector to collaborate with us. Hopefully through such small steps, it will result in larger collaborations going forward.
Yes. The meeting is follow-up. Are you aware of the commitment that exists between government and the companies that were found guilty of collusion in 2010? Have you established any formal relationship? Because those companies have got a binding agreement with government to cooperate, you know. And have you established any formal ties with them? Have you got people that you're monitoring there?
Thank you, Chair. We do have a relationship with Group 5 because they've taken some of our interns. But yes, you are right, you can even include the others. But Group 5, we do have a working relationship with them.
On the second question of the percentage of graduates that's actually getting employed or employing themselves, we are now in the process of updating our website so that individuals can capture their own information in sort of a database for unemployed or employed graduates, professionals, practitioners. We're trying to kill a lot of birds with one stone in this regard. But we're also collaborating with DPW actively on a study that's, well, we're drawing up the terms of reference at this present moment for tracking the throughput rate specifically from graduation at secondary school through to eventual graduation at tertiary levels. So hopefully we'll have some concrete results within the next couple of months.
Lastly, Chair, the bursary, the list of students who receive bursary, will request the Department of Public Works to circulate that list because they were awarded those bursaries in January.
Thank you very much, presenters. Any further comments, questions, honourable members? Data for time.
Yes, Chair. Yeah. Just a follow-up question on whether you actually have a operational relationship with the CIDP. Strategic or operational?
I'll make my comments later.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just need clarity with this institution. That how far you? How many branches you have in rural areas, South Africa, region, when it comes to offices? Because really, I think people are not aware of your institution, more especially in a rural area.
Thanks.
I think that is the challenge that Erard was talking about, the footprint of the CBE. We are in Pretoria, yes, but I went to Public Works, I think beginning of January, to talk about that we need to increase our footprint. So we are going to work closely with Public Works, and we'll use their regional offices to create the awareness of CBE and the professional council. So we have agreed with their intergovernmental relations office that they are going to help us, because we are a small component. And it's really difficult to be all over. But again, that's why we also want to work with government departments, because they will also help us to create this visibility of the CBE. We had a meeting with Etowin Municipality. We're trying to form partnerships with them, because we said if we can work with municipalities, it might be easier for them to coordinate, you know, all other smaller municipalities around them, so that when we introduce the intervention, it will be easier, because otherwise really we won't be able to go to every municipality, every rural area, every even urban areas for that matter. So we are planning on our strategy is to collaborate so that we are able to increase our footprint.
But what's also perhaps of importance, you should have an idea, in order to carry out the mandate of the CBE, how many people do you need to be employed to be actually able to carry out this mandate? At your head office, logistics, organogram. You are given a mandate, but how does one carry out the mandate without the requisite human and other resources? So that should also be something that we can communicate with the department.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I just wanted to add something from the department based on the discussion which was happening, particularly around the issue of SACLAB, which was raised in terms of their challenges to transform, and the issue related to funding, as Harold indicated. For the first time, the department was able to help one of the councils in the name of SACLAB, where they're having a challenge of funding. They want to close your. So from 15-16, the department interacted with National Treasury with a view to assist them to have a footing, because they were not getting resources even to do their operational goals. So we're able to get funding from Treasury in the tune of 651,000 for start. So we're helping them for MTF. So the last funding will be for 17-18, which will sort of assist them. But over and above that, the requirement or the condition which was put by National Treasury was that they need to come up with a sustainability plan, so that we see how best this council sustain itself. And then to that, honorable members, is that in all our six councils, we're not having a line of support in terms of money, primarily because all our six councils, they were not PFMP compliant, as it was affected. So working with the National Treasury to help them so that they deal with this thing as the PFMA entity so that we do proper oversight on them, working with the CBE. I just wanted to add that just for members to understand how things were. I'm sure it was in the making of the act which we have put for all the cousins. So we are able to sort of assist. The other point which we want to contribute to this department is on the issue of the relationship with private sector, which was raised by members. In all the legislation of our councils, we have put a provision where we need to recognize the voluntary association. That section was meant to sort of strengthen the relationship with private sector in all the councils. And in their makeup, in the governance structures, those associations are able to sort of, you know, nominate their members to serve in the councils. By so doing, there's a dynamic interaction in the private sector in their day-to-day affairs through the councils and participating. So I just wanted to add that for the members to understand how that relationship is sort of, you know, I mean, panned out. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, the in issue of the collaboration with the FDP, we participate in their transformation steering committee, but they are also part of our transformation. Remember that their focus is on construction. Our focus is on professionalism of the built environment. So we have that working relationship with them. But both of us then will also report to the department. But we, in terms of going forward, we have agreed that we need, there was a proposal that I made to the CEO that we need to formalize our, you know, whether we establish a forum of the CEOs from the four entities so that we address the issues that relate to the built environment.
Thank you very much. I must say earlier on, the Honorable Kola Barnett reminded me about TM, and the gentleman was asked to go and check on the team. Now, he has not come back. It's like the second time that Noah sent out to land, to check for the land. So he hasn't come back. So I surmise that our tea trolley was captured by a band of thirsty and hungry people. So unfortunately, I can't say tea good folks. My apologies. So is there anything else? Shadafutan, you wanted to say something?
It is about the thanks for the opportunity. It's just a closing remark, critical analysis of what we have gone through you today. I think you need to do a critical analysis of the reasons why you are not seeing, you know, as much professionalization of the industry in the context of transformation. You know, there are other reasons. I think statutory setup in South Africa is not exactly on your side. And it is your call to come up with the proposed amendments to the current legislation that you know affects your space. You know, you are there exactly for that. And if you come up with relevant you know proposed amendments, it will be our call to support you know that through Parliament. I don't think the PMFA is on your side. I'm convinced it is not on your side. If so, specifically, I want to suggest that you go through the PMFA and identify the standing blocks and suggest to the department the necessary amendments. That's my first point. And CIDB, they cut across the built industry, you know, but you're focusing on the professionalization. Now, there is no building that goes up without professional guidance. So it is absolutely necessary that you formalize your relationship with them. It doesn't help much. The cause of transformation is not assisted much if CIDB push companies to have a huge number of formerly disadvantaged people as laborers there, and have a small number of professionals who design buildings and oversee the construction of bridges. Because what's happening at the moment is that the exclusive elite club of people who have got the experience and the expertise of designing design things in such a manner that in South Africa you will not find anyone who can do it. Rather have to import someone from Europe or something. Now that's a political game. We all know that's a political game designed to perpetuate unnecessary and overdue reliance on foreign help just because the project is multi-billion. I come across such instances, and I'm sure you should also be having an appetite to check on cases of that nature. Construction will always be there, you know, landscaping will always be there, and so on and so on. All the elements will always be there. So you need to be putting pressure on all government fora to make sure that the transformative professionalization, you know, of the industry does happen in your time.
That is my appeal to you, and one of the ways in which you can do it is by keeping checking how many professionals actually land a job,
and in so doing you will have assisted in the fight against continued unemployment. That's how ordinary men in the street sees transformation, that in at a time when there were more blacks in administration, you know, who were able to get jobs. As simple as all that for the ordinary South African. Without necessarily disadvantaging those who had this opportunity before, because I believe we need each other. That's the bottom line. So it's not apartheid and reverse, but we want to see, you know, transformation taking place. Thank you.
Members, thank you very much. Meeting adjourned. Okay. So I'll just follow up in the house with the chairperson of the police and then write him a formal letter and escalate it up to the ministers.
It's right.
I think